Hi, welcome to episode 11 of the No Code SaaS podcast with myself, Glenn, Kieran, and James. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
How are you both?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Yeah, all good. It's good to be back because we've had a little bit of a gap, haven't we? But it's great to be back recording again.
Exactly, yeah. So Kieran and I did an episode a while ago, just the two of us, while you were away. I think you were traveling off somewhere, but welcome back. And yeah, we've got some interesting things to go over today. Two very important topics. The first one, I'm going to bring it up right up front, is your news, James, because, well, why don't you tell everybody what's happened over the past week?
I guess it's something that we've probably spoken about a bit before, and it's something that I've been thinking about for a long time. And so, yeah, last week I went to start working full time on my no-code SaaS, I guess. So I quit my job, but I actually quit it 3 months ago last year in November. So it was a long notice period. So I've just been kind of working that through. But yeah, I mean, I'm super excited to be working on it full time. It just felt like the right moment to really go all in on it and give a proper go, especially with, you know, some of the changes we've been seeing over the last few months with OpenAI and integrating that into the product and that helping with traction and marketing and all of that. So it did feel like kind of the right time to focus on it 100% really.
Amazing news. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah, well done. And Kieran, you said it just before our call. In fact, you were saying you were wondering if James is perhaps the first person that we know of in our circles anyway, but we're quite happy if people want to call us out on this one. James might be the first person to become full-time on his no-code SaaS product that we know anyway. So congratulations for that as well.
Yeah, it's an amazing achievement, really, with no code. I mean, I'm sure you're going to be the first of many, but to be the first is pretty special.
That's it. I mean, there's a clear path for many other people to do it. So I think, you know, us talking about it and documenting what we've learned on our own journeys with it is, you know, hopefully really helpful to getting the next batch of people through to kind of getting full independence and working, you know, on a SaaS without having to be a programmer. I mean, it's like kind of nuts to say that. Like 5 years ago, it would have been unimaginable for me to be running like a software business without actually coding anything, really. So yeah, hopefully more and more people are going to be, you know, learning how to do it and kind of breaking free, really.
Yeah, and I'm sure they will, but I mean, it's worth saying that you have been doing everything right. I think we were discussing in Twitter DMs that amazing video on building a SaaS by, what was his name? Cohen from TinyConf. And he basically goes through and breaks down exactly how to bootstrap a SaaS and what you need to do. All the things you should focus on, all the markets you should focus on, how you should identify problems. And when I watch it, I think, James is doing everything right. He's like doing the perfect playbook. And you've never even seen the video, but you're just nailing it. Whereas I was thinking, I'm doing a lot of things wrong, like making a B2C SaaS. Like he clearly says, you just need to do B2B. Don't even try doing B2C. And yeah, tons of things like that, which I don't know if you intentionally did it or just fell into it, but you seem to have taken the right path, and it's proven itself really, because you're the first one to go full time.
Yeah, I think it's probably from watching tons of that content, and I did do the Y Combinator startup school a couple of years ago that had a load of that stuff in it, so I think I probably picked a bit up from there. But yeah, I think it's, and it's just trial and error. You know, I tried B2C as well, and I found it really hard. That was the quiz app that I built a couple of years ago, and it really was unbelievably hard to monetize it. So I was kind of got the battle scars and didn't want to do that again. So I think it is right for most people to focus on B2B on that first one, because it's just so hard B2C as well. Like the prices that people pay are often way less. Like $5 is a lot of people to buy on a personal basis, but companies, yeah, generally have more set aside for software that helps them do things more efficiently.
Yeah, and companies are used to paying for things in order to gain more value for themselves, like leverage it. whereas people don't do that. They pay for things to consume them, but they're not really expecting to get any value from it. So I think it's just a really different mindset when they're coming to purchase something. And the guy is called Jason Cohen, by the way. I've just looked him up on Twitter. At A Smart Bear on Twitter.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And it does make me think of what kind of one recent exception to the rule that I've been spotting quite a bit of, like D2C SaaS doing quite well, which is quite unusual. Is I like Peter Levels and a couple of other people have been doing loads of stuff with AI avatars and stuff like that, creating AI like Instagram photos and stuff like that. And that seems to be doing really well. So I think there is still room to break through there, but it is harder.
Yeah, I think if you've got a really big audience like Peter Levels, and if you're really good at marketing like Peter Levels, then certainly it's possible. But I think Rob Walling says that B2B SaaS, you don't really need an audience to start with. You can start it without any audience at all. And then it's just a matter of doing regular sales and marketing and things like that, which, you know, for anyone without an audience to start with, it's quite reassuring to know that you can just jump straight in.
Definitely.
But the problem is, whenever you're trying to come up with ideas, you always think of the B2C ideas first, because it's just so much easier to think of the ideas because they're everywhere and they're the kind of things that you might use. And if you're not in any kind of business context, it's hard to kind of put yourself in the position of perhaps a business owner who's going to be making those purchasing decisions and work out what they need. So I think it's a really good idea to like leverage, as you did, the job you were in to work out what people need, what other businesses need.
I was just looking at the other ones of Peter Levels is Danny, isn't it? Danny Postmar, who has obviously been doing AI stuff as well. And he just launched deepagency.com a couple of days ago, or maybe even yesterday, the 6th. And I was trying to find the comment he made where he was basically saying that, you know, he can't believe more people aren't doing this. You know, him and Peter are kind of the only two kind of really going for it with this AI stuff and the avatar stuff. And you kind of think, well, you can see why, because it's such a risky proposition, putting a lot of effort and time into something like that, and it just maybe just not getting the traction that it needs. Whereas he's got a post here from 10 hours ago where, talking about his deepagency.com, he's had 4 million views just on Twitter for that post. Now, he's got a big audience already, so you can kind of expect that. But even still, that's a lot of interest. So the B2C stuff is there if you can just tap into the right idea. And that's the risk, isn't it? Whereas a B2B is more of a known quantity. You kind of know what you're dealing with. You know what pain points are, or you can find out quite easily. So it's all down to sort of personal preference, I think. And what are your thoughts on doing a little bit of both? You know, does that just lose focus? You just, as you say, Kieran, when you have that shiny object syndrome and you like to go after multiple things, the spread of small bets, is that distracting if you're doing B2C and B2B, or actually is that a sensible approach?
I'm kind of doing that with Yet, because I do have a few communities which are using it for their own kind of boot camps and things like that. So they are kind of businesses. And then I have my, you know, normal customers. And yeah, I think it is distracting to have both of them. Like, it would be much easier just to focus on one. And certainly the individual customers, I get way more requests for support from them than I do from the communities. It's, you know, it's a good way to start. And if you can, you know, spread your risk by having these two different types of customer, then that's a good thing. But definitely it's distracting. And it feels kind of like you're running two different apps, because the needs of both customers are quite different. But at the same time, the end users that are using it through the communities are individuals. So I do need to focus on the features that they need as well as the businesses. So it's more kind of B2B to C, which, yeah, I will say from experience is quite a lot of work.
One of my favorite people is Simon Hoiberg. He's a bootstrapper. He's kind of not anti-VC, although maybe he is. He really believes strongly in bootstrapping and the possibilities that are out there for everybody to just pick up on all of this technology and just run with them. So he runs FeedHive and most recently launched Link Drip, which is another product they built. And then he also bought his first product, which was Tiny Kiwi. But all of those three products all work together in some way, and they can work separately too. But I think he's done a really clever thing there with bringing those three products or different things together to actually make an even better core product. But he's also doing things like, yeah, bringing in AI as an assistant in the product, because it's about writing tweets, etc. So why not actually leverage AI as well? He's using AI to be an assistant in creating his thumbnails for YouTube, writing the scripts. He's really experimenting. And I think he's just a good person to look towards from an entrepreneurship point of view, from a SaaS point of view. And he's also been tweeting more recently on no code as well. And he's a big proponent of no code. Yeah, I think it's great to see somebody who's from a more traditional development background recognizing the opportunities that we all have now, you know?
Yeah, he's good. I've seen some of his YouTube videos. He's one of these people that's really good at YouTube, and I wish I could be that good.
Yeah, really good. He admits that he doesn't do it all on his own. He's got people to help with that, but it's still really good, right? So
yeah.
Cool. So moving on from there then, let's talk about OpenAI/ChatGPT. Now, everybody might be bored hearing this by the time they listen to this episode, but it is fresh. And that is the release of ChatGPT API. So why is this a big deal, do you two think? Because it's really blown up online. Everybody was always already using the tool. They were enjoying using the online interface in the website. But with the release of the API, I'm kind of thinking a little bit back to what we said about our predictions before Christmas for the year ahead. And this seems to play quite nicely into that. So what are your comments on that, guys?
Well, I think for me, the big difference with the chat API, the text completion API that OpenAI had out previously with that DaVinci 3 model, which was very similar to what the chat model does, is the massive drop in the cost of the new chat API. So it's 10x less to run than the old text completion model. And it has really kind of similar results, and it's faster as well. Plus, there is more capability within this API to actually program the persona of the bot itself. So you can put different commands into it. It's more granular than the ChatGPT on the website, because you can actually give it system commands of what kind of chatbot it is and things like that it takes in, and then it uses those in all following responses. So I've implemented it in my app. First of all, I had the text completion API, and just in the last week, I've been swapping that out for the new chat API. I've seen really great improvement in results and that ability to give it a persona. So I give it a persona of you are an analyst for a e-commerce marketing brand, analyzing their sales data and survey responses and all this kind of stuff. And that really increases the quality of the outputs that it gives. Really, for me now, my kind of prime focus at the moment is putting that deeply throughout the app everywhere and really making the app an AI-first application, really. I'd done some experimentation with that text completion API early on, and there was some good feedback from that. But now I really do see this as an area to stand aside from the competition, because I don't think anyone else is doing, well, certainly in my niche anyway, no one is doing anything with AI like this at the moment. So my main focus is to go all in, integrating that chat API throughout the product and focus on marketing with that as well.
That's amazing. And a bold thing to do, perhaps, that to go AI first, does that also carry across in the messaging and the sell of the app as well then, James? Or do you try and calm that a little bit and not go too hype with it? Because at the moment, obviously, it's really popular, but people are just not going to care ultimately, are they? They're interested in the results. So how do you get the balance right between hype and...
Yeah, so at the moment, it isn't in the marketing, but it will be the lead thing in the marketing for it. And not just from a hype of this is an AI feature, but actually for the utility that it provides in the application, it is genuinely really useful. So probably the most easy to explain application that I have is, let's say a brand runs a survey and they get 10,000 customers respond to that survey, and every customer responds with a sentence. To go and read 10,000 sentences about what are the colors or what other changes customers would like to that product is a huge amount of work. So my implementation with OpenAI is that it will go and read all of the customer feedback. So it will go and read those 10,000 lines, and then it will summarize them into the most common things, the ones that the highest value customers asked for, all that kind of stuff. So it is actually a really useful addition to the application. And that's something I've been thinking about a lot, because obviously there's a great temptation to just put AI features in because it's cool, but it really does actually have to be, you know, delivering customer value. And that's actually the hard bit that I think we're all working out at the moment, is how do we take the capabilities of that technology and apply it to, you know, real customer pain points that actually make a massive difference to them and that they're willing to pay for. So that's where I've been looking at it. The other place in the application that I'm going to be applying it is in the onboarding process. So that's typically where customers struggle thinking, what questions should I ask, all this kind of stuff. And there I'll have OpenAI actually suggest the questions for them, tailored to their brand. So if they're a fashion brand, it will tailor it to their specific niche. So those are the two kind of areas I'm going in on it. But there are tons of other, you know, things to do. But I think it is important to just constantly think, you know, what actual customer value can be delivered with this. And that is the tricky part.
Those are very good ideas for implementations. Is there any limit to the amount of data you can feed into it? Like 10,000 lines sounds like it would say, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. And I've experimented quite a bit with how to avoid hitting those limits. OpenAI's API operates with this concept of tokens. And basically, tokens make up the entire content of your request and the response at a high level. So you get, I think, a maximum of 4,000. So your request and the response can't go over 4,000 tokens. So what I've done with my app is I've put character limits on the inputs that I'm putting into it. So when I take those 10,000 feedbacks, I will limit each one to like the length of a tweet. So it might not be the whole feedback, but it gets the most, because some people do obviously leave essays and that would overrun the whole thing. So I do cap them in bubble just with the character limit operator when I send it in. But it probably takes a bit of experimentation for everyone. You can do multiple requests and thread them together as well. But I think for majority of use cases, 4,000 tokens for me has been like more than enough. And it does keep your costs under control as well, you know, being mindful about how much you're actually using.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
Have you thought, James, about maybe moving forwards or retrospectively applying it, but you could summarize each feedback and store that summary and then use that when you actually do the analysis? So it's like a two-stage process. So then you're not having to crop the characters, maybe perhaps the most important bit in the feedback is discovered, you could actually do the summary.
Definitely. And I mean, how I'm using OpenAI at the moment is I do it all on the back end. So when I do a summary for a piece of feedback, that's stored in the database in a table, just because I didn't want the front end doing tons of direct requests to OpenAI. So it's done by the back end, stored to the database, and then that's shown in the front end. But yeah, I've definitely thought about, you know, could I thread all those summaries from OpenAI together and then feed them through it again to say, you know, give me an overview of this entire survey with, you know, the 10 questions, what do people say? So I'm definitely interested in experimenting with that as well. So yeah, there is a ton of potential with it. So yeah, it's pretty exciting time, really.
And I also saw one of your tweets the other day where you were looking into backends again, databases again. I know it's a constant thing for you, probably for anybody getting serious with their application, where you're having to aggregate and analyze this data more efficiently. I guess once you've got that bit sorted, then it's going to be more straightforward to then do the OpenAI bit as well, isn't it? Because you've just got a faster, you know, maybe more reliable, cheaper even engine driving all that data. Have you made any progress with that?
Yeah. So The reason I was looking into that is, I guess it may be particular to my use case, but I think other SaaS apps may encounter it as well, is that in my app, I have analytics for the surveys, and it's all reliant on the Bubble database. And the problem I was having was just with running counts. So if a customer had had a survey with thousands and thousands of responses, and then I'm trying to count up like 20 different things on one page, that's where Bubble was. It was just taking too long for me in that case. I'd tried everything I could to optimize it, but I just don't think that's Bubble's strength, is doing those kind of complex filtering and counts. So that's what I had been looking for over the last kind of couple of weeks, was what solution could I use to store that data? You know, it's quite, all I want to store is a bunch of IDs from Bubble, basically the unique IDs of like five things. And then I want to count them, but there's just millions of them. That was the challenge. And I put that question out on Twitter, and I had some absolutely amazing responses, because I'd been researching on this for weeks and I hadn't found a satisfactory answer. And I had a fantastic suggestion of a tool called TinyBird, which I've actually integrated, and it's working now. And it is exactly what it's built for, basically. So it lets you store millions and millions of records and then query them and get counts back. So for analytics, it's absolutely perfect. And it's, yeah, so far in my testing, it's been great. Super affordable as well. That was the other barrier that I was coming up against. You know, loads of these databases, like Xano, for example, wasn't actually good for this use case because of the cost of storing the records was going to be too much. So it really was finding a database that was all focused on analytics and counts. And yeah, TinyBird's been great. They've been super helpful. Thanks to Ab on Twitter, who recommended that to me. But yeah, that's super handy. So I'm going to write a newsletter edition about that as well, because I think it is something that other apps are going to come up against. Because I certainly don't want to stop using the Bubble database, and I'll carry on using it. It was just in this case where I needed to do counts quickly. It wasn't okay. But most of my jobs happen on the back end, and it doesn't matter if it takes a while, to be honest. So it was just on this use case for that analytics page where it did need to be a bit quicker. But yeah, that's been really good.
Shout out to Ab.
Yeah, thanks so much. I would never have found it. I would never have found it in all my searching. So
yeah, awesome. He's super knowledgeable and really helpful. He's the guy that made the CoAlias plugin, which I use for doing like custom domains.
Yeah, that's on my list as well to try out.
Yeah, that's good. He knows his stuff. I just had one question, which I'm sure a lot of people will be interested in. Like, what is the difference that you, I know it's only been a week, what's the difference you've noticed in terms of your productivity? Can you explain to people what it feels like to go from one day you're working and doing this in your spare time to suddenly you have the whole day, every day to focus on this? Have you seen like a massive change, or is it less than you thought, or are you taking some time to get up to speed?
No, I think the biggest thing I'm going to have to keep an eye on, and I think that a lot of people find, is time management and actually making sure that I'm not, you know, spending all day every day building in Bubble, which I have been, you know, over the last week, you know, even on the weekends, just staying up really late at night working on it, because I kind of find it enjoyable. But I really do need to make sure that I am carving out time on marketing tasks as well for me. So that is going to be the big thing. But yeah, I mean, it's been a massive difference in the amount I can really focus on this. And, you know, these like big problems that had been floating around for months, like this database thing, I've pretty much solved in like 2 days now, just from being focused on it. And then I can move on to the next thing. But a lot of those problems were things that were really potentially going to stop the app scaling anymore, because if it can't handle a big customer, then what am I doing marketing for? It was my thinking. So there's kind of these few things that I've been really sorting out. But yeah, overall, been great to focus on it full time. I think I just got to be super disciplined with carving out time in my diary, now that my day isn't filled up with phone calls, to actually make sure that I'm spending time on the right things. So I have been making lists and things that are, you know, to-do lists and stuff, and sticking to that is going to be super important. So that's probably the biggest difference, really, is it's just going to be time management that I'm going to have to spend a bit more time thinking about, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So thanks, James. Anything else to report your side before I flip over to Kieran?
No, I think that's pretty much the majority of the update.
It's a lot. And yeah, just can't wait to see what happens over the next few weeks with everything that you're doing. And I think everybody listening will be really looking towards you to, as a bit of an inspiration, as much as anything else, as well as this kind of knowledge that you're sharing. I think it's so valuable, so that they are aware of it by the time they get there, you know? So thank you for all of that. Kieran, so your side, how are things?
Yeah, things are all right. I haven't got anything nearly as exciting as that to report. I passed $700 MRR, although it kind of goes up and down depending on the day you look at the numbers. It seemed like it took ages to go from 600 to 700, but admittedly, I've done barely any marketing over the last few months and haven't really given yet as much focus as I had been previously, because I've been doing freelance projects and making the course, which basically took an entire month. So I'm now getting to a point where I'm going to at least put in a week or two more of work on Yep and do some marketing. The marketing will probably come on the back of a couple of new features that I'm working on. One of them is I finally got around to kind of restructuring the database in a way that I needed to, so that I can push out this new kind of new look template. My plan was to completely change the way that you make pages, and instead of have it where you type directly into the page, you just have a kind of more normal, more standard looking inputs where you type in what you want and then you'll see it previewed on the page, because that gives me the opportunity to then have loads of different page templates which you can, you know, apply them and see how it looks. But I had someone do a kind of roast of the onboarding process, Julia Schnee, who just messaged me on Twitter to say, would I like her to do one? So she did one, and it was absolutely amazing. She just recorded herself using the product for the first time and just talked through what she was thinking. And definitely, like, the when she got to the page where you start typing into it and creating your landing page, that was the kind of aha moment for her, when she just typed straight into the page and she was like, oh, this is really cool. It was like a moment of delight. So I was thinking, I need to keep that in, because although it's not an ideal user interface, because if I do want to change the template, I need to change both the input page and the output page every time I want to make a different template. But I did think maybe I should keep that in just for that wow moment at the beginning. So I've been working on restructuring the database, and I'm just going to make it so that people can apply this new template if they want, and the input page won't look the same as the output page, but that's fine for now. That's going to be a bit messy, but it'll be fine, and it looks quite nice. And then the other thing I wanted to work on was the integrating ChatGPT. I've got a ton of ideas. I had tried doing the previous completions API before, but I wasn't getting great results for what I was trying. And I feel like with ChatGPT, because I've used it so much on their website, I just feel like I know more how to use it and how to get better results out and what it's capable of, even though really there's probably not much difference. So I've been watching a load of YouTube videos about how it all works and how you get good results. I watched a really interesting one the other day. There's a guy building a startup on top of ChatGPT, which enables you to just get better results, and it does it by like combining what you're asking, but also going out and getting websites and scraping them to get more factual content, and then also feeding in more context from your previous questions to it. So by using all this stuff, you can just get much better results out, because it's not just relying on its own knowledge of what's out there, but like you can actually say, you know, tell me this, here is the Wikipedia page, just to make sure you get your facts straight, because we know that ChatGPT has a tendency to be very confident about things that are sometimes wrong. So I found that quite interesting, and I've been thinking about ways that I can kind of feed that into Yep to give like better results. So like, instead of having it just generate landing page content, I could give it a load of examples of really good landing page copy, and then also feed in like, and this is the details of the person's app idea, and then hopefully it will give better results. So I'm going to be hopefully playing around with that in the next week or so.
Cool. Whenever I think about Yep, you're talking about that there, it definitely feels to me like ChatGPT can be a real assistant to the whole process, you know, whether it's what do I put here? How do I say it? As you say, what are the sources of this information? Show me another example. And there just must be so much information out there that we don't even know whether ChatGPT can access it or is making use of it yet. But I'm thinking something like you could partner with somebody like Corey Haynes, who reviews landing pages, you know, and actually produces great, not roasts, but like, you know, audits of landing pages with his swipe files and stuff. And you could actually bring that into another product and actually have a partnership there. How that would work with ChatGPT, I don't know. I think, is that then straying into the realms of fine tuning and custom models? James, you probably know more than anything. I do not know anything about that at this stage.
It is a bit, yeah. I mean, one thing that you can do with that chat model is customizing the model that it runs on. It looks fairly straightforward from what I've seen, but I think you can also achieve a lot of those results just by the prompt engineering, basically. And like you're saying, pass in good examples. So like, for example, with me, how I'm going to do it is pass in a load of best practice customer service questions and then say, customize these questions for a beauty brand, for example. So I'm not leaving it to just completely come up with everything, but actually giving it what I know is good and then asking it to customize that, basically. So I think it really is about that prompt that you put in. If you're not descriptive enough, you're going to get quite generic stuff out. So I think, yeah, Kieran, you're totally right to focus on the prompt and how, what inputs you get from your customers and then how you structure those inputs into the prompt, into ChatGPT. That's, you know, the most important thing from what I've seen is, you know, getting that right. And so that it's consistent. Mm-hmm. That's certainly something that I've experimented, because it was important that you get consistent. Like, if you're going to be suggesting copy for a landing page, you want to make sure that every time you do that request, you kind of know what you're going to get back. And you're not going to get something completely crazy back one time compared to another. So yeah, it's all about those prompts.
Yeah. And are you able to, with the API, are you able to have like context from previous questions? Like, can you have a conversation with it like you can on the website? Or is it just one prompt and then it doesn't remember what you asked before?
I have looked into it. I think it is possible, but it's more complicated to do. So I haven't actually achieved that yet. And I'm not sure how that factors into the token limits as well, because I think that would be the other thing that you'd come up against, is if you were, you know, bundling lots together, gets quite complicated. And I'm not sure if the embeddings might be better for that kind of thing. Because I've certainly thought, you know, I'd love to put in all of the data into ChatGPT and then just make it accessible for my customers to ask questions. But so far, I've not found a way of doing that, really. I think embeddings is the way, but I don't quite get it. The other thing that we were talking about, Kieran, that I'm kind of really excited about, isn't quite technically there yet, but is the ability to get structured JSON back from that chat API that then you can do things in your own UI with. So, for example, what I want to do with it is I want to give it an example of a JSON object with a question and answers inside, get that back and then use it in my UI. And as we've seen so far, ChatGPT can reply with the JSON. It's just not in a format that we can use in Bubble right now. So I know Yusuf from Minimum Studios got this JSON parsing plugin that's like imminently going to drop, I think, which solves that. And at that point, I think that's worth another discussion, because I think that opens up like an insane amount of possibilities with no code and Bubble then, because you can then do structured things with the data instead of, at the moment, I think we're all just getting blocks of text back pretty much, which is great. But wouldn't it be cool if you could actually do, you know, get an entire object back that then you can do things with? So that's another step change. So I'm hoping next week or so for that, but I reckon that's going to be another big, big moment.
I don't know whether this helps, but when I dived into the API when it was released last week, I just did it all in Insomnia, just as a Mac app for just like, you know, Postman and all the rest of it. And two things came out of that, literally like 15-minute investigation. One was, you definitely do get structured data back. It just comes back in a form that you can then feed into the next question that you might have. So in proper true chat style. So I think the word they use is context. So you can use that previous question and answer as your context for the next question. And then the answer will be based on all of the data that you've already fed in. So that's the first bit. The second bit is how that works is you have an array, and each question and answer is like an object inside that array. So you definitely should be able to just grab that whole array, loop through it, do whatever you want to do with it. You're doing it just in Insomnia, you can see it. You can see clearly what's going on. But as soon as you start building that into the UI and having to work with that context and that chunk of data, that's obviously what the no-code tools are now trying to catch up with. And it's like, how can I enable this for people to make use of this in a very visual, easy way, as opposed to you having to figure out, you know, looping through array objects. So.
That sounds like it's possible, though. Super interesting. It does actually make me think of something that I saw in the Bubble platform update that from Josh, the founder, in the forum a couple of days ago for March, their product update. And one of the points in there was that they are actively investigating how to implement AI into Bubble to actually help you design workflows and the UI and everything. So that is very encouraging to hear, because, you know, there's obviously huge potential for it to help you build stuff in Bubble, because it's already been, you know, really documented how great it is with the GitHub Copilot. So there's no reason it shouldn't work on a platform with Bubble. So that's great to hear that they're looking into that.
It's so funny, you know, because I was doing a research project in the 90s, showing my age, and they were called dynamic user interfaces time. And the idea was that user interface would adapt to the kind of persona that you have. Are you a novice user, an advanced user of this particular product? What's your level of competence, basically? And the AI then had to learn your style of working with the computer, sort of classify you, if you like, and then adapt the interface to suit. So it's amazing to me now that we're at the point where anybody can build that using this theoretically without really needing to know how to code, as definitely with these no-code providers helping us to do that. And the power is available to everybody, whereas that was a research product and very complex, and, you know, AI was in its sort of infancy in many ways in the 90s. And here we are, come full circle. So, yeah, really exciting times.
Awesome. And I guess that kind of leads us on to you, Glenn. What did you have any updates about what you've been working on since we last chatted?
I'll focus on, well, a couple of things, really. One is I've been doing a lot of client work, but also I found this amazing organization called Big Change in the UK, who are looking to support change in the education system in the UK to actually help kids to learn more skills that they can use in the real world. Now, that could be anything. They're not prescriptive about what that might be. So they set this challenge that you could apply for funding. I put an application in, and I'm hoping I can get some kind of recognition from it for no-code kids, because it ticked a lot of the boxes of what they were saying, basically, is, you know, trying to get real-world skills in there, vocational stuff, things that will help them in their lives, whatever that might be. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do with no-code kids. So that's the first bit. And we won't hear from them until May in terms of the challenge winners. But if we did get some kind of support from them, you don't just get financial support. You can also get support from a team of people who can help accelerate that product. So I'm really hopeful for that. I'd like to think that it would be seen in a good light. But then again, they've had hundreds of applicants as well, and there are only 15 finalists that can actually go through. So yeah, just getting into this idea of applying for funding and trying to get this idea now developed faster and further than trying to do it just on my own. So that's the first thing. The second thing is what ChatGPT API has suggested to me is that I could bring this definitely into the content of what is taught on the No-Code Kids program, but also, as you say, into the actual product itself. So because I'm now using a product that is completely API focused, you know, its whole MO is to draw on the strength of APIs and data, etc. I would love to be able to bring ChatGPT into the interface, not just from a fun point of view for the kids, but also you know, what let's build something together, or if you're trying to learn something, what can I do to support your learning of that concept? Lots of different kind of educational aspects to this. So I'm really going to be looking into that further and seeing what I could do with that. I know that the WISD/FinSuite team are also looking carefully at ChatGPT, as everybody is. So I think they would be really keen to support anything to do with WISD and ChatGPT. So yeah, watch this space on that one, but definitely something we all need to consider. But I think, as you say, James, it's something that can be a real value add in the product and in learning as well for the kids. I mean, I talked to this school in America last week, and it was very interesting because they don't have a fixed curriculum. So we were talking through some of the ideas, and whereas they might be ideas that are more difficult for British schools to adopt because of the curriculum, national curriculum, they were completely open-ended. So, and they were a virtual school as well. So anything that's delivered online and has the flexibility to suddenly introduce a new technology like ChatGPT, she was really, really keen on that. She was like, oh, the kids would love this. You know, that was her reaction. The kids would love this. So I thought, what a wonderful position to be in, to be able to say, yep, we're open to it. Something's turned up. It's important. It's potentially going to change the world. It's already having an impact. How can we get this in front of the kids as quickly as possible? I'd love to be able to talk to British schools more like that. And I think that maybe the academy style schools in this country might be a bit more able to do that, but it's a learning process just as we go along. But yeah, really encouraging to be able to talk to a school that definitely gets it and really wants to jump on board and give their kids everything they can. So
yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Super exciting. I guess there is a temptation of a lot of the headlines that you see around at the moment are, you know, schools trying to ban ChatGPT and all this kind of stuff. It's kind of a bit, kind of misses the point, really, I think, of, you know, this is a generational technology change. And I think it's kind of futile in a lot of ways to try and stop people learning about it. I think it's fair enough, you know, ChatGPT have already released that API that you can use to detect stuff written with it. But I think, you know, if I was growing up now, I would really, really want to fully immerse myself in this, because this is, you know, bigger than the internet potentially, isn't it? I think, you know, in terms of the impact on society it's going to have. So the earlier people can learn about it, the better, I think. So, yeah, fingers crossed you get some good forward-looking schools interested.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and I'm totally with you on that. How do we work with this, not try and ignore it or be in denial about it? It's here to stay. This isn't suddenly going to shut down. It's not a fad, is it? This is now so popular, so useful. It's undeniable. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. This is huge. So people who aren't currently thinking about this, I think, are just doing themselves a disservice. Whether you're B2C, B2B, doesn't matter what you're doing. Our audience here, we should all be looking at this and thinking about how we can make use of this. This is not a gimmick. Yeah, that's sort of, I think all three of us will agree that, right? That's a big advice to put out to people.
From the point of view of, you know, schools and anyone where they're trying to, you know, test how well their students have been learning, it's going to be a nightmare few years trying to adapt their methods, because basically they need to completely change the way they assess students, because you can't just say, write an essay on this and then we're going to mark you, because the students will either just paste in ChatGPT verbatim or they will use it heavily to structure their essay and rewrite things. So yeah, they need to adapt very quickly to find a way, not to ban it, but to find a way to kind of work with it and say, okay, let's see how good you are writing ChatGPT prompts, and we're going to judge you on that rather than on the actual essay that you get from it. And you know, I guess the same thing happened when the internet emerged and suddenly people weren't going to the library. People are just looking up Google Scholar on the online and Wikipedia and stuff like that.
So there's one very obvious barrier, which is cost. So even if it doesn't cost a lot, how many kids would create an account and start paying money out to not do their homework? You know, so unless they just use their parents' account or something. So it's, I think, as the free level of these kinds of tools is going to diminish and money is going to be changing hands a lot more, maybe that will help actually to stem the flow of just straight copying. But we shall see. I'm aware of the time, and Kieran, I know that you have to go. So I thought we could wrap this up quite quickly. Is there anything else you want to discuss today, or are we okay to call it a day?
Yeah, all good.
Yeah? Okay, well, thanks, guys. Thanks for that. I think that was really interesting. We'll call this one the ChatGPT episode, but I'm sure we'll be talking about it a lot more as time goes by. We've also got plans, just the last thing to say, to have guests come on this year. We've already had some conversation, brief conversation, with Rob Walling from MicroConf, etc. And we would love to hear from anybody that would like to come on the show. We will be reaching out to people, but yeah, that's just to put that out there as well.
Definitely.
Okay. Thanks, guys. See you again next week.
Thanks, Seb. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.